This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at HomeTeam.com.
My wife asked me before, she said, "Babe, why do you show up for this person who has done you wrong?" And I said, "Babe, because I've been in a position where I hope somebody would show up for me. And so I just want to be that person that shows up for people, and it'll work out in the end." You know, leadership is a unique thing, but I think that the only thing in life that leads to leverage is leadership.
Welcome back to the Color Money Podcast. I'm joined today with my great co-hosts, Bowman Keady and Ms. Julia Lachey. And today we have one of my friends, one of my mentors, one of my brothers, Mr. Kaleo Kina. They call him Agent K on the streets. He runs a $75 million team. He's a market center owner. Some people even call him OP of the year at times. He has a hard money lending business. He's a father of four with one more on the way. All those kids are under 7 years old. He's a commercial investor. He spent 8 years in the Navy. U.S. Men's Gold Medal Collegiate Champion. Navy Basketball Hall of Fame. Leader of the KWYP community. And what I would argue most importantly, one of the most incredible humans that I know and that I have the luxury of having a really good relationship with. So welcome, Agent K.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a really good introduction. That might have been the best one yet I've ever received, man.
Man, I was meditating this morning and it's paused the meditation and put the notes in and then got back going again. Delivered it for you, my guy.
I really appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Now, you have such a wide variety of knowledge, experience, and expertise in so many different areas. But today I want to discuss more of the journey of leadership and how the military prepared you to lead and kind of what you've learned over the last decade with growing your team, your growing market centers, your position as a team leader. I think you being a leader of humans is one of your biggest attributes. So I want to learn a little bit about how you got on that leadership journey, what the military taught you, and what you've learned over the last decade in leading humans.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And so it's kind of an all-encompassing, big kind of question to conquer. But I think we start from the beginning. And it starts with family. I think it's how you're raised. I don't know if you've read the book, The Four Agreements, but the input that you receive throughout your lifetime curate this person that you are today. And so what I would probably start with is my mother on my leadership journey. My mother, my aunt, and my grandma, I call those three, you know, who raised me. So my mom had me when she was 16 in Hawaii. She moved to California, got married, had my twin sisters, got divorced, got married again. We moved to Arizona, had my little brother. And then my second stepfather passed away, and then she got married again, and then I went off to college. But I would say that journey or childhood journey growing up, I was the oldest of four. I would consider myself the oldest of six, if you count my aunt's kids, because they lived with us half the time anyway. But that journey of just being raised in different communities and different families and watching my mother persevere and how she showed up every day, I think that was the start or the foundation for how I began to learn about leadership later on in life. And so definitely want to give a shout out to my mom, my aunt, and my grandma. And those are three very different personalities, right? My mom is the patriarch of the family. She leads with love and care. The most caring person in my family. And we probably all have that one person in our family. Like, if you have a problem with them, you're probably the problem because nobody ever has a problem with them, right? That's my mom. But my aunt's the total opposite. She's the grit and grind. If she got a problem, it's probably her problem. But if she has a problem, it's your problem too, because you ain't going to walk her off the ledge. Like, she's going to hold it down all the way. She's the one that I would call if, like, my T-Mobile bill was too high. I'd be like, "Aunt, can you call them for me and, you know, get it waived?" And then my grandma, she just showed me what, like, perseverance. She wasn't the best mother to my aunt and mother, but she was an amazing grandma. And it showed that, like, when life knocks you down, you don't have to give up. And so having them as my foundation growing up, I think was a huge pivotal role in my opportunity to then attend the Naval Academy and get a whole nother leadership experience for sure. Went to the Naval Academy, spent 4 years there. Luckily had the opportunity to play basketball. I may or may not be in the Navy Basketball Hall of Fame. My name is quite easily Googleable, so you can verify and fact check. And then I served 8 years active duty as a surface warfare officer in the military. And that was another leadership experience, right? Going from middle class, lower class, like public school, to the highest of most prestigious schools in the country, right? And so I definitely had a big learning curve there and how to adapt and adjust. And then serving 8 years active duty, you then become a 21-year-old who has a college degree and are expected to lead men in a time of war that are 42 years old, 20 more years of life experience than you. And yet when I walk down the alleyway, they salute me and they expect me to show up in a way that I can lead them while still simultaneously leading peers. And then, you know, the 17, 18-year-olds that didn't have other opportunity or really wanted to join right out of high school. And so you really get the leadership opportunity to discover who you are and how you need to lead. And it gives you a great opportunity for that. And so when I did that, that was an 8-year run, 12 if you count the Naval Academy. And I was actually fortunate enough to win the Navy Marine Corps Leadership Award in 2015, which I was given through the entire United States fleet. So that was an awesome recognition. And then I also got to play basketball, which is its own team and family environment and provides its own leadership opportunities, which then when I transitioned to real estate in 2017, quite frankly, the business part was the part that I needed to learn. The leadership part has been a piece of cake because I have been leading my whole life up to that point. And so some people say I got into real estate late at 30, but I got into leadership early in life. I got a PhD in leadership from the Naval Academy and serving. And so it's been an awesome opportunity that that time was actually not wasted. It actually prepared me to be as successful as I want to be as I'm continuing to grow and learn the business space. And so, yeah, the leadership journey is something I'm very familiar with, and I'm anxious to field questions and dive into different parts, but that's kind of what sums it up in my 37-year lifespan.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for your service. You were a leader at a very young age. So some people say some leaders are born and leaders are made. What would you say? Are leaders born or made?
I think it's a mixture of both. Right. I think some people are definitely born with some qualities and then curated at a young age by the environment they're in. But I do think you can learn a lot in leadership along the way. Was it the chicken or the egg? Like, I think it's a combination of both. And what I learned in retrospect, when you look back, like hindsight's 2020, I really do believe that. I mean, I heard this quote somewhere. Got your quotes coming, Daniel. But your environment is the invisible hand that shapes behavior. And so before I was just happened to be in these environments that helped grow me or had the opportunity to shape me. And I would say in the last decade, I've learned to be very intentional about the environments I place myself in order to capitalize on what that can really do for your life, for sure.
You can learn business, and I think you can learn business fairly quickly, but I think the hardest thing for most people to understand and learn is leadership, because it's trial by fire. You can read all the leadership books, but until you're in those moments and understand how to actually go through those moments and coach and train and lead and discipline and encourage and love, and there's so many different hats that you need to wear as a leader that I don't think, maybe you got started a little late in real estate or whatnot, but I think that that's going to be part of one of your biggest traits that's going to propel you to have an incredible career in this business.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think we saw Ed Mylett a couple years ago, and he said, you know, you're most suited to serve the people that you once were, or something to that effect. And one of the unique things about me is that I've essentially been a chameleon my whole life. So I'm Hawaiian Samoan, right? And so my brothers and sisters are Samoan and Black. So I grew up in a predominantly African-American family, three of them. So like I had to adapt and to adjust to a culture that wasn't Hawaiian or Samoan. Then I went to the Naval Academy, which is predominantly white. Then I had to adjust to what it's like to operate in that. And that's not to just bring race to the forefront, but those are just actual different environments, right? And then I went into the Navy, and I'm a 21-year-old kid trying to lead people that are 40 and 50. And so like they have way more life experience. So now we have the age demographic. So it's like I have been put in positions my whole life to figure out people and maybe some PTSD or daddy issues with trauma. Like, why was my dad never there? And so I've learned at a very early age how to make people love me very quickly, right? How can I tap into somebody's emotional connection? And it starts with authenticity and vulnerability, but like I can make a connection pretty quick. And people feel compelled to, you know, open up or what. I make people feel safe very quickly, but that's because I always wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be loved. I wanted to know why, you know, my father wasn't there, right? And why my mom had to do it on her own. And then I wanted to prove him wrong growing up. And so today we have a great relationship. I met him when I was 25, and we had very adult conversations about, you know, where, how we got us today. But I think some of that played a role. It's like, sometimes our biggest traumas growing up end up being strengths that help us navigate life.
I love it. I always say, Clay, that the gift is the curse and the curse is the gift. And the things that we sometimes think are our biggest burdens are oftentimes the things that give us our greatest strengths. You know, as somebody who lived a similar life of moving between communities and identities, I'm really interested in how you think about in your leadership journey and also how you've applied it to real estate. You know, you kind of hinted at it, this fine line between making everybody else comfortable and moving to adapt to all these other environments, yet also holding that sense of self, that direction, that purpose. And, you know, you've been in leadership roles since a very young age. How have you balanced sort of the idea of leading people and also adapting to them? And how has that played a role in your success?
Yeah, I think some of it is balancing and some of it is falling and getting up and trying to rebalance, right? And so navigating different age groups, demographics, personalities has not been the easiest. Not the easiest thing, but I think you begin to learn different traits and things that you can use to connect with people. And I think one of the first thing is, like, in order to lead people, you have to be generally interested in leadership, and leadership involves people. So you have to enjoy the process of getting to know people, right? When you say you don't like people, like, I'm not saying you're going to be a bad leader, but there's going to be less connectivity there for the long term. And so my family was unique in that we all loved each other. So I knew how to love hard, like, and through trials and tribulations. But basketball was probably the first experience where you got to see not everybody could be coached the same, right? Some people like me, like, I need you to yell at me. I need you to tell me that I can't do it. And it motivates me to get that extra oomph out of me. There are some other kids that as soon as you yell at them, they shut down. And so they need encouragement. They need words of affirmation. And I think at an early age, I saw that the way you communicate with individuals, messages are delivered to an audience, but they're received individually. And so while you can have a company messaging, the individual conversation or how they receive it individually is still very pertinent into how they're going to respond to what you're trying to communicate. And so I've learned that although the group message is important, right, making sure that, you know, who are they and what do you know of them and how they're going to receive that message, because that indicates their understanding and whether you guys are on the same level of conversation.
Claire, quickly, I'm sorry. I've been trying to keep up with all your snippets. I'm taking notes like I'm reading a book, right? So it was messages are delivered to an audience, but they're received individually?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to use all your quotes in my Instagram.
Please do. I probably got them. I got them from somewhere myself, so I can't take credit.
I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah. So I think that that was the first stage of, like, learning leadership at a lower level, just in sports teams, like how to get the most out of your teammates or how the coach gets the most out of each player. And so you saw the communication gap and the connection gap. And then once I got into the military, now we have male-female dynamics, we have cultural dynamics, and we have age dynamics, right? And so, you know, words mean a lot. Older people, like, when you say sir and ma'am, it makes them feel comfortable. There's a sense of subconscious respect when you start a conversation that they're more willing to listen. When I got first into real estate, for me, there's just subconscious thing, like, I wear a Naval Academy jacket because then they associate with me with a prestigious school and their barrier of, like, resistance lowers. And so there's things that, you know, that society just accepts as true that you can use to your advantage. And I just learned how to adapt to those things in terms of, like, what do I think the other person needs to hear in order to lower their walls to then make a true connection? Because if you don't have that connectivity up front, you're just fighting resistance. It's like you're running in mud. And so it's just trying to work through all of that. And so I just learned to be a really good read of people and the ability to make authentic connections early on to then have real conversation. And so once you get to certain levels, the level of respect you curate in that relationship determines the amount of, like, the way they listen to you or the way they take it on. You can be a great speaker, have a lot to view, but if somebody doesn't want to listen to you or respect you, it's never going to get through anyway. And so it's just been a hodgepodge of learning through my life. Trust me, I haven't always been the best leader. I've also had a lot of fallouts or heated conversations that could have went different ways in reflection on how I could have handled that better. And so it definitely isn't sunshine and rainbows, but I have had tons of leadership experience on how to handle people. I lead men differently than I lead women. I lead them different at different age groups. Like, people need to be led individually as best as you can, depending on the mass of your business or the size. And then at that point, your goal should be to lead other leaders who then can lead more people. And so that's kind of a connection to that.
Kaleo, you talked about adaptability and being able to adapt so that you can connect. You know, there's people out there that say, I'm just going to be myself. I'm going to keep it 100. I'm going to show up, you know, how I am. And I hear you saying something different. You're saying there's certain ways that you have to maybe not do that to connect with people. Am I hearing you correctly?
I think authenticity is a strength, and I applaud people that can operate in that space and generate, you know, the audience or the following. I also think there's a time and a place for everything to be your most authentic self. Fortunately, unfortunately for me, like, I couldn't be my most authentic self in the beginning because life and society puts up roadblocks. And so I had to create a version of myself that was accepted to enter the door before I then exposed my authentic self. So I'm not saying to be fake. I'm not saying to liar. You can't be that. I've just learned that through my leadership journey, there's certain ways you need to show up to earn the right to then be your most authentic self. In a perfect world, we all can just be who we are. But unfortunately, life isn't that. Life is the ability to connect with people and to earn the right in people's spaces to then show up as you need to show up.
I love that idea that the ability and the awareness of other people's barriers, acknowledging and adjusting to those barriers, does not have to take away from being your authentic self. It actually might be the gateway to authentic connection. Because if I show up with my authentic self and my authentic self puts up every barrier and every rejection from everybody else, there is no authentic connection. There is just resistance. And I think we live in a world today where there's a lot of showing up at extremes or with something on my sleeve or something to prove that never allows us to create those human connections that actually is where real authenticity happens. So just love that.
Well, I think one of the things with Kaleo too is like maybe your adaptability, but ever since I've known you, you've never not kept it 100. So as like the authenticity, the always keeping it a buck, like that is very much the human you are. But I think you pick and choose your times on when, what version of that 100 you're going to actually use in that moment versus just having that, here's who I am, take it or leave it type of attitude. I've learned a lot of that for myself and made me a better person learning that through you.
Our co-host Emmerich said, you know, we were in a class one time and people were talking about showing up as their authentic self. And he said, should we really show up as our authentic self or who we aspire to be? Mm. Because sometimes our authentic self is like, maybe you should show up as the other version, the one you're working on, you know, like, you know.
So, Julia, I want a different version of you today. Yeah. Give me the aspirational version.
Yeah.
I think Bo actually used the word like the self-awareness to understand your environment and the people around it. And then to understand where you arrive in that environment, right? I think very highly of myself. I believe I have tons of value to add to the world. But there are certain spaces that, you know, just a funny story. Daniel invited me into this agnostic investor mastermind. Tons of people here have higher net worths and all this stuff. And so it was just a unique experience for me to be in a room that was different than the ones I'm used to. But I appreciate him for putting me in those uncomfortable situations. And so one of his mentors leads this mastermind, and he's been coaching with them for 7 years. And so he saw that I had made a connection with Daniel. And for like 3 or 4 events, I had never approached him because he leads the mastermind. Everybody wants his attention, right? Everybody's going up to him. And then around the 3rd or 4th mastermind, he actually made his way to me. And he was like, are you Kaleo? And I'm like, yes, sir. And he was like, you're Daniel's guy. You're always hanging out with him. How come you've never said hi to me? Right. And I think I've learned that in the spaces of time and energy and family that like I never want to waste my opportunity to bring value to somebody's world because that value might be limited, you know, seasons and reasons. And so I was like, I haven't come up to you yet because I haven't figured out how I'm going to add value. But when I do, promise me I'll circle back. And he laughed. He was like, oh, I don't think. But then afterwards, he was like, I really appreciated that of you is because as I was learning this space, I wasn't ready. I didn't want to waste an opportunity to just say hi. Like I wanted to maximize that moment. And so when me and Daniel got in conversation, I then brought him, I was like, hey, I'd love to connect again. And I brought some leaders into his world. I helped a CEO, a mastermind on team building, but it was like, now I can capitalize on that relationship. And so it's just understanding like the nuances of people's spaces in the world. And so that was just one of the things. It's just like to get value, you must be of value. And I think oftentimes we waste the opportunity because we just want to show up. Like Bo said, like all that glitters isn't gold. And online, we're just showing up. Just show up. Just create content. I get it. That works in certain spaces. But when we're talking about real life connection, like how are you bringing value to the circle that you want to be a part of?
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
When you think about leadership, Kay, I want to switch gears a little bit. You have the leaders that think that accountability is just being a complete hard ass. And then you have the other leaders that are like, hey, well, I got to make everyone like me because if not, they're going to leave. How do you balance that being a friend versus being a boss with people that are inside of your world?
Good question. I mean, obviously, if we all have teams or have been in real estate, the accountability question is always the hard question, right? How do you create a standard that is upheld, that you execute at a high level? Because if you don't hold the standard right, then it's just a suggestion. And so I think that's been the hardest one because we're in an entrepreneur space, 1099. Like, we get into real estate for financial freedom and flexibility. And yet, in order to earn the right to have those things, like, you need some significant discipline and accountability, right? And a lot of people are very uncomfortable with accountability. And so I think it's over time creating a level of respect and framing that you're here to help them accomplish their dreams. So really the accountability has to be built around like where they're at and where they're trying to get to go. I think the conversation becomes a little easier or palatable for them when it's around what they're trying to accomplish, right? And hopefully what they're trying to accomplish inside your world helps you drive what you're trying to accomplish for the company. But it definitely is around them achieving their goals, right? A company exists for its people. The people don't exist for the company. There's a book called The Dream Manager that really hit me. Like, how can you get so connected that you understand their dreams and how holding them accountable to these business metrics are going to help them achieve that dream? It shouldn't just be, you should do this because I said so or because the MREA said so. It's because these metrics will allow you to live a life that you're trying to accomplish. And I'm trying to help you get there. And this is what is required to achieve that dream.
I love what you're saying because there was this quote, since we're on quotes today, and by the way, I love that you love quotes. He said that you have to love people to lead them, but just loving on people is not leading them. And I think that in our industry, this idea that you actually have to love people to actually lead them. And you started with that. You said, I learned how to love so I could lead. But our industry oftentimes thinks that popularity and loving on people is actually leadership. And that is not leadership. Right. And sometimes it is that. And what defines that difference there is that connection between helping people move towards their goals that you're talking about, right? And that process is not always an easy one or a comfortable one, but enabling people to move in the direction of those goals and dreams is what defines it.
Well, the thing that's hard about that, though, is like we've hired and fired probably 200 people over the last 8 years. I love really hard and I've learned to stop loving so hard because you're going to leave. So it's a weird thing of like, I want to be bought all the way in and I want to help you, but then I'm going to help you to a point that you're then going to want to go try to do something else. And I'm going to be left picking up the pieces. So how do you juggle both, Bo?
I'll be honest, I really struggle with this, especially in our industry, because our industry is so transient. People can just move. They can leave. You could invest years in them and they can just tomorrow walk out the door and go somewhere else. And so on one hand, I've been trying to figure out that I got to wake up. The way I thought about it, which is may not be the healthiest, but it was like an evolution for me, was that I had to have enough people that I was investing in that ultimately I wasn't so dependent on one. So it wasn't that I had to love less. I had to love with some quantity so that there was at least enough that if there was a problem, I wasn't so stuck that I then got so hurt by that I couldn't move forward. I also had to learn that sometimes loving people means letting them go. And that doesn't mean that they're always going to just be gone. They may come back. I had to learn a lot of times that there were elements that I was trying to teach somebody that they had a different perspective. Like I've had a couple of people in my company that thought they wanted to be entrepreneurs. I had this woman I worked with. She was amazing, phenomenal, best person I've ever worked with. And I kept trying to get her to be my business partner. And she kept saying, well, I've never been an entrepreneur. So to be equal to you in a business relationship, I got to go prove that I can be an entrepreneur. And she was not an entrepreneur. That was not her gift. That was not her skill. And she ended up leaving to go start her own business, right? Which lasted all of 6 months because that was not her thing. But she needed to have that experience. Like if I was not going to talk her into this mindset shift. And so sometimes I think the long-term journey means people have to go through an experience. And so you have to love enough to let them go through that experience.
And I think I have a totally different perspective of this. I lead people with the expectation that they'll leave. And same as you, Bo, maybe there's some trauma behind that, but I don't expect anybody to stay with me or in any one particular place. And differently, I want to pour as much in as I can because I know our time is probably short. And I feel like there's that, there's a saying, since we're talking about quotes. For me, it's not. It doesn't make, yeah, for me, it's like, to your point, I'm going to give out this energy and things anyway. Maybe I just do it to more people so that it's not going to negatively affect if one leaves. But there's a quote out there that says, like, what if we train them and they leave? And then that says, well, what if we don't train them and they stay? And that's worse. I don't want unskilled, untrained, unloved people working with me. I'd rather give all of that energy into somebody you probably, my expectation is that you'll leave, people leave. This isn't a marriage. And even then, people leave, you know, but it's just a business relationship. And I have no idea how long we'll have together. But hopefully in the time we had together, I've poured enough into you for you to become something great and someone else will come. I feel like it's an evolving process of something. It's just revolving. I mean, not evolving, a process of something you have to do in leadership.
I totally agree, Julia, but I'm gonna ask one question because I think there's this thing, and I don't know the answer. I'd love you guys' thoughts on this. I think that oftentimes I've taken this approach as a leader that I'm going to give of myself, just give to the world. And I think I'm okay with that. But I've had to notice that ultimately to do anything really big, you need a really tight, small team. And that tight, small team has to give to the mission at a really, really high level. And one of the things I haven't figured out yet is, I'm trying to work on is, if I'm giving to everybody and there's a couple of people that know they're giving more to the team, that can be demotivating for them. And so for the first time in my leadership journey, I've been trying to figure out, do I have to create two tiers of give? Because if I'm just giving, and my team members see me giving to the person who's not committed as much as I'm giving to the person who's 100% in, what impact does that have on them? I'm just interested in how you guys think about that leadership challenge.
I feel like Leo knows the answer.
Well, I actually recently came across this in our team.
See?
You know, yeah. We do 200 units. I have one agent. She does like 50 to 60 a year annually. Brought on some team members and some people transition, and you know, there are some agents on the team that are only doing 6 to 12, right? But they get all of the things, all of the love, the same time allotted with Agent K. And it got to a point where she was like, why is he here? And I'm here like, I don't feel like I'm getting the most out of you because you're giving the same to him and he's not showing up for you the way I'm showing up for you in that capacity. And so it's one we've had to navigate around standards and suggestions, right? But I think, Bo, you kind of touched on it in that I think there's an evolution of that giving and that loving, right? Daniel, it is exhausting, but in loving people, isn't that what makes love so special? That we open up to be so vulnerable that it gives us the opportunity to be hurt. And yet you've created a world so big that you've had the opportunity to attract to enough people to help you grow this thing, right? Now, it hasn't always been easy, but the more we love on people, the more we find the right ones. And unfortunately, we do get hurt sometimes, right?
Well, I think we're throwing the word love around versus like caring. I think those are two different things for me. Like, I love really hard and I have a small group of people that I love really hard for. And when someone in my world penetrates that circle and then leaves, it feels like a breakup. I'm not talking about just agents leaving. I'm talking about people that you literally, I'm helping you with your life, your mind, your family, your growth, like everything. I'm pouring into you. To then have you bail, it creates this pause of kind of what we're talking about right now. Like, well, there is a different level of love or leadership that this group has because of its production or tenure or potential or whatever else it is, versus here's how you give yourself to, you know, brokerage agents or new agents on your team or whatever that looks like.
One of the lessons, though, like Daniel, and I understood what you three think about this. One of the lessons that I've been learning in this season of my life is that no matter how permanent you think anything is, no matter how solid you think it is, and no matter how much you pour into it, it may not be permanent. You can still lose that which you deeply love. And someone said to me the other day that the price of love is grief, and the price of care is loss. And so whenever we care or love or put something out, we are risking loss. And I don't know that there's in life any certainty. no matter how tight we think a relationship is, no matter how close we think something is, it doesn't always end up being forever. And so the question becomes, whether it's a professional relationship in a big group or whether it's the deepest of personal relationships, how do we get ourselves okay enough with the risk of loss and grief that we can love the way we need to love to achieve the life and the relationships that we want to have?
That's a great question. And that's deep, Bo. Yeah.
That's deep. That's real deep.
But maybe that's why I have a totally different perspective of this than you do, because I've experienced the ultimate grief. I've lost a child, yeah. Right? Yeah. So I'm like, maybe I have an icebox where my heart used to be. I'm like, ain't none of this permanent anyway.
So and this ain't even close to what I experienced.
Yeah, I'm like, and I'm not in control of anything, and there's always loss, and everybody leaves, and nothing is permanent, and you don't know when it ends. And so I just live in that space where I'm like, I don't expect anybody. If my children are going to outlive me, I don't expect anybody to stay with me. And so I have a totally different perspective of, I'm not going to not care or give or pour in. Again, my expectation is that you'll be gone. I just don't know how long, you know, it'll be. So I'm not going to shortchange anybody in the relationship, the leadership relationship, you know, because you might leave. You're going to. You were never mine. You know what I mean? Like it was, even my child was never mine. He belonged to God, right? Like this is never my child. It was never mine. So I don't, if you leave, you leave. You didn't belong to me. You were just here for the time we had, you know?
Well, I think that's just a powerful mindset. Like mindset's everything. What you believe to be true will be true, right? And your belief system is I'm going to show up and love as much as I can because that's who I am. And that's your superpower, is that you will always love to the capacity that you want to because you understand that framework of time at the most intimate level, right? Whereas like some of us are going through different leadership and growth phases. And so it's kind of like Daniel said, like, I don't know, like we might throw love around, but I believe in love and I use it quite easily in all the conversations because I believe I love authentically to everybody in my circle, to the capacity that I can. Like the accountability question with the agents, it's pretty easy. I say, hey, if I love you like I say I do, I will not allow you to show up this way. I use that exact line. Like, I know you got a kid. I know you stay at home with your mom. Is there a bucket of money I don't know about? Like, if I love you like I say you do, like, I know that your goal is this and this is how we're performing, right? Or like, I tell people, like, if there's a bigger opportunity, go be great. Just don't forget about me because I loved you authentically in the time that we got to share. You know what I'm saying? And so, but I wrote down all those quotes. And Julia, thank you for sharing. That was big insight. And I respect you at all levels for that share. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. And to your point about accountability, when you first brought it up, I thought about when I was coaching some agents and I knew what she was doing wrong, right? But like you said, you want to be nice and you want to be gentle and you want to be kind and you want to do all this loving. And so I remember never telling her the hard truth that she needed to hear, you know? And when she left, I felt so responsible. Like it was, as a leader, it was my responsibility. I knew exactly what was wrong with her, you know, but it was my responsibility. I felt like I had done her an injustice by not like doing what you just said, like saying like, hey, if I actually said I care about you, I have got to tell you this. Otherwise, I'm not doing the duty of a leader or an account. To let you continue in this way is irresponsible of me as a leader to allow you to think that what you're doing and saying is okay when I know exactly why it's not serving you.
Can I shift gears just a second? Something just dawned on me that, like, you said, hey, you got into real estate in 2017, right? And it's also when you had your first, you said kids were under 7. So we got 7 years from the military to not just real estate, to leading a market center, to owning one, to building ancillary businesses. Oh, and by the way, 4 kids plus a 5th one on the way. You had a big 7 years. And a lot of people sitting around here going, well, I could never be like, you know, I could never be like Agent K. You know, he's next level. That's some aspirational stuff. I just got to do my little piece. But can you tell us just a little bit about, like, that's 7 years of massive change. What facilitated that? You know, what would you say to other people who are feeling like, okay, my life's kind of just going to be the way it's going to be?
Thanks, Bo. I think that I believe in the quote that we hear all the time in Keller Williams that people often overestimate where they can be in 1 year and underestimate where they can be in 5. I would say for my real estate journey, it really didn't start until I joined KW in 19. So most of the business growth has happened at Keller Williams. I mean, that's a 5-year run. But I would say my transition from the military, I did everything you weren't supposed to do, right? I bought a house, got married, had a baby, bought a car, and I had like $5,000 in a savings account, but I had no debt because I went to Naval Academy. So I was winning at that time in my life. And I think we got to allow ourselves permission to grow and for our dreams to change along the journey. Our ceilings end up being our floors, but you know, in the beginning, I just wanted to sell 2 homes a month, and that would cover more than I needed, right? And then I wanted to be an investor. Then I wanted to be a team leader. Then I wanted to be an OP. Then I wanted to own these businesses. And what I found is we often think about ourselves, and I come back to the environment. My family might not have been perfect, but it was perfect for me. And my friends might not be perfect, but they were perfect for me. And so I really believe in the power of people, and I think you have to be very intentional about curating your environment with the right people that are going to help you grow. And there's a mentor that shares, like, we should have 3 groups of people, right? The first group is the one that we're inspired by, that we admire, that live by the same moral fiber, or have what we want to attain, at least what we believe we want to at the moment. And then you have the group of, your second group is a group that are in the same boat as you, that are want to grow, that have the same mindset, that want to drive a big result. And then the third group is the people that you want to lift up and bring along the way. And so I just have been very lucky and intentional. Lucky doesn't happen on accident. It happens by being in the right place at the right time, of being able to find those 3 people in real estate at the different seasons to continue to fast track my opportunity. In every business I have a partner. That's just how I've ran it. I think Gary Keller is really smart. I think he's the godfather of real estate. I also think that his superpower is that he gets to syndicate the collective thought of the greatest minds in real estate and then package it up and reframe it as his own. Like, he just has the people and the top talented people to bring him the best ideas. Now, he is super smart, but like, that's the superpower. Like, who can you get around that you can help you think bigger, grow faster? And so first one in life's my wife. I could never do anything I do in this world today without her making my house a home. She's the most amazing mother, the most amazing partner. Like, if she doesn't be who she is, I never get the opportunity. I get permission from her to go attack life in this manner, to show up in this manner. And so that was my first partner. And then my OP was a mentor of mine that helped me business. My best friend co-team leaned with me as we grew that. Daniel has been a very instrumental relationship and partner in my wealth building and personal growth and professional growth. And so it's like, what are the people you're surrounding yourself by very intentionally? Because the fast track doesn't happen on your own. I could go drive a pretty good result by myself. I believe that to be true. I think I can be greater with the right people, right? And so, you know, not to quote the big guy, Neo, old school R&B, but, you know, I'm a movement by myself, but I'm a force when we're together, baby. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so it's like, we can be so much bigger. And then I would think that along the way, something Bo had said when he said the word leadership, I think oftentimes leadership in real estate, team owners or team leaders get mistaken with synonymous with the word leadership. Unfortunately, in my tenure as a team leader and coaching other teams and interviewing tons of agents, you know, most people get into this team building or business building because they need help. And I think that's the opposite of what should happen. You should only start that journey on business building or inviting people into your world when you can help people. And I think that's a very separate mind shift of, oh, I need a showing assistant or I need a buyer's agent. No, like, I have the business and the training and education to help this person become a buyer's agent or win in the showing assistant role. And I think that oftentimes we're just looking for help and it's not leadership. It's when you're prepared to help other people that it becomes leadership. And so I've just saw that, like, you have to become what you want somebody to be for you. And my wife asked me before, she said, babe, why do you show up for this person who has done you wrong or I know has said something behind my back or may not be her favorite person? And she's like, why do you show up for that person like that? Like, what do you do then? And I said, babe, because I've been in a position where I hope somebody would show up for me. And so I just want to be that person that shows up for people and it'll work out in the end. I believe that to be true. And so, you know, leadership is a unique thing, but I think that the only thing in life that leads to leverage is leadership.
That was a great way to end. I didn't even have to ask you for final thoughts or anything.
Just crushed it.
So good.
Dang, I thought we had more time. Yeah.
We're going to end up going for like 2 hours. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on today, Kay. This is impactful. And I think that, again, your depth of knowledge and experience is inspiring. I love you. I appreciate you, brother. Julia, Bo, any last words?
None from me. I'd love to hear what's the one thing that Kaleo would like to leave the audience with, if you could just leave them with one thing.
Oftentimes when we're trying to grow our world, it's because we need help. I think that we are most empowered and positioned to be successful is when we invite people in our world, when we can help people. And so figure out what your superpower is and then help people accomplish what they need to. I mean, and then leadership will take off from there. But I am super grateful and thankful that I had the opportunity to be on this podcast and to be talking to the level of leadership that I am right now. And so thank you guys for leading from the front. Thank you for the opportunity. And I look forward to seeing you down the road. I would call Daniel the big guy, but he's half my size. So I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Real quick before we go, Claire, do you remember what the score to the Niner Cowboy game was this past weekend?
Sorry, I'm losing connection. It's
all jacked up. That's what I thought. All right, until next time, friends. We'll see you soon.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.